He's smarter than Batman, stronger than Superman, and better looking than Thor. It's your host, Alex Curtis. Are you ready for the Batman?
Hello, and welcome back to the Advisors Assemble podcast. I've got an old mucker, an old chum, a former colleague, lover, friend. I'll do the accent. I may offend some Sicilians and Italians, but Castenzio Cusumano.
That was almost like talking to an uncle.
Yeah, well, there you are.
Being summoned by somebody.
Yeah, because he's a full-on
doing something wrong. That's exactly how
it is. What does you like your mum and dad use like the full-on name when you're naughty?
When I've been naughty, yeah. And that sounds really weird at 37, doesn't it, to say I've been naughty and I've been summoned by my mum and dad with my full name said in that way as well.
Yeah,
it's pretty crazy.
For normally we call you Kaz when we're not telling you off.
Exactly, yeah. When you want something.
Yeah, exactly. Can you come on my podcast? So for history for everyone else, we used to work together and I'm getting stuff on my Facebook timeline 8 years ago, 9 years ago, 10 years ago, all these the memories that come up on Facebook of when we used to work together in that agency. It's mental, isn't it?
It is crazy to think that it seems like yesterday though, doesn't it?
I know. And then there's the stuff where we wore like the fisherman jumper
yeah, stuff like that. Matching, like impromptu matching uniforms that we just turned up in one day. And when you used to put Nutella on my drink, claiming that you'd been to the toilet.
Yeah. When I was making my notes for this, I didn't really want to bring that up, actually. But maybe I think people that know were probably not surprised that I would. So I would make Kaz a coffee and the kitchen was downstairs and I would put Nutella on the side of his cup and pretend that I'd not washed my hands after going to the toilet.
It's nice. It's a nice thought for everybody, isn't it?
Like, yeah, not that people had a lot of respect for me already, but now I'm a negative equity when it comes to respect, I think, from everyone.
Absolutely.
But I was 10 years younger.
I bet your concern is getting Kaz on this podcast is, oh gosh.
Oh, do you know what? I genuinely didn't think about that. So that I can't, hopefully there's nothing else that's going to be brought up.
I'm pretty sure there will be, but anyway.
But working FWD probably is what steered my sort of path in like the financial services. And one of the reasons why we got this podcast is because we worked, so the money shop was like was the biggest, pretty much a lot of the time, the only client that we worked on.
Yeah, that's right.
And
yeah.
It was being able to say to people, I understand the FCA and bits like that then got me, because when I left FWD, I started going into I worked with a pensions company and then car finance and mortgages. And it was all because, I get the FCA. But a lot of the time, we were just given the small print, weren't we? Because we did their TV adverts. You were doing all their in-store stuff. We did kind of everything for the money shop, didn't we?
We did everything, didn't we? We did the campaigns. We did the radio ads, photography. It was one of those clients that, I guess, back then, payday loans was rife everywhere. It ended up being a lot like the tobacco industry by the end of it. But it gave me, I don't know what you think, but so many opportunities and so many different avenues of the creative industry. Like I say, being involved in TV commercials, I wouldn't have thought that coming out of college as a graphic designer that I'd be getting involved in storyboarding a national TV commercial. One thing I didn't remember doing, which was great fun, was doing the animations around the games for the England matches. So if you remember those on the billboards, that was great. Seeing the goal.
Yeah, that was goal. Was that for Barracuda though? Was that for
we did it for the money shop. I think we might have done.
Yes, because Wolverhampton. We went to the Wolves Stadium.
It opened up loads of opportunities, and I could go on, watching an England game and go, oh, there's my banner, and it would be even better if they scored, because then it would just be constantly being played when England scored. I think there was a few times when England did score, and the banner was on, and obviously the client loved that, and we
put it on social and everything on social like that,
and utilizing as much as possible. But we had a great time though, didn't we? I remember filming like the petrol guy stuff. And
do you know what I was gonna say? I was gonna say, if anyone wants to see some horrific marketing, go onto YouTube and search petrol guy. Because I remember, so I started with FWD just after that advert was all done, and the advert was on TV at the time that I started. And I remember Chris Moyles mentioning on Radio 1 breakfast show about petrol guy, and it blew up, didn't it? It was crazy.
It was phenomenal how viral it went.
It was unintentional. Completely. It was like trying to be like a good advert. It was such a horrific reaction from that.
Yeah, we wouldn't have thought that. We didn't think that would ever happen. And it was good fun. It was a good ride after. We kind of milked it.
Crazy videos. Yeah, we just did
videos. We did them at my house, didn't we? I had him running around the street.
Did a Christmas special.
Did a Christmas special with making a turkey and doing loads of jump cuts. It was really good fun. I picked up photography whilst working at FWD, and that's a staple of what I'm doing as well, offering. We learned a lot on the job, didn't we?
Oh, we did. We did. I think it was, I did lots of like agency like stuff before, but it was like always for the SME, the small sort of business. And this was like they'd gone from like 100 stores. I think they had 100 stores when I started and 500 plus within 2 years.
Yeah, they grew.
It was absolute rapid growth, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And then learning a lot about the industry. Like I remember obviously payday loans had a really bad rep. And everyone assumed that it was all about, like, if they saw, because we went behind the scenes of their annual conference and everything.
Yeah.
It was really interesting, and like how the leadership team and the management team spoke to their staff. And it was all about, look, anyone could lend money, but it's actually lending money that people can afford. And they actually wanted people to be able to afford. It wasn't like that sharkness that was the public perception. I always thought that was like really interesting. The backstage stuff, but then they, was that Cat? They had a mascot cat as well, wasn't it? Their internal.
Which you robbed the, I remember you robbing the fancy dress that the cat was wearing and robbed his head. What happened? You stole his head and you went.
Can we not use words like steal and robbing? Like, I remember wearing the head, but I remember having an amazing time with their head of training and everything like that, and us doing videos together with, I think I was still connected with them on LinkedIn.
Yeah, that was so, yeah, it was such a good laugh back then, this stuff.
That was what I don't remember meeting. We went to David Dickinson's house, you and me.
House, yeah, we did. Yeah, absolutely.
I still know the directions from his house to the M6 because the amount of the times he repeated it. Do you remember? Like,
just turn up,
roll the gate back if you don't mind. Down the road, turn left over the Silk Roundabout. We don't know why it's called the Silk Roundabout, it's just called the right thing. Turn right, no, and then go through, and then but take the sign to Sandbach. Don't go through Sandbach. And then you'll be on the M6.
It was just like talking to him in an episode of Real Deal, wasn't it? It was exactly like that. Yeah, the house is incredible. And just as I imagined it would be, it looked very antique and it was just really nice and ornate. And he was a lovely guy, wasn't he? He was a nice
dude. Yeah, he was. But apart from him saying about our camera being small, it was like $6,000 worth of camera. And he was like, I'm used to them big cameras at the BBC.
Are you a professional photographer?
Yeah, it was literally like that. Oh, God. Okay, so this is amazing for you and me reminiscing, but for everyone listening, they're right, guys, let's get to the point where we actually going to discuss.
Get to the point. Go for it.
But you're a designer, so now you've got your own business, you're doing a lot of stuff, and you were always well into your branding and everything, weren't you? And now I remember one thing I remember about you was like you how much you loved the FedEx logo. And I remember when the FedEx van came up and you was like, I did this whole dissertation. I was like, dude, it just says Fed and X. And you were like, no, look, you can see the arrow. And then there's the arrow between the E and the, and now I can't not see it because you pointed it out.
It sticks in your mind. That's the beauty of the smile of the mind effect. And it was all based around this idea. What I love about design and is, there was a book called Smile in the Mind that I studied when I was at college. And there was a whole host of designs where the design decision wasn't an obvious one, but it was there. But when you discovered it, you were just like, wow. And you couldn't unsee it. And that's so much that the FedEx logo does perfectly. If, you know, anybody that's listening hasn't recognized or seen that yet, and now we've brought it to attention, they're going to have such a kind of that amazing first time of seeing it and going, oh, it's the arrow. I really wish we lived that again. That discovery point, that's discovery moment.
It is a good one. It is a good one.
It's very cool. Yeah.
So one thing I want to talk about today, my sort of objective today really was to, no matter the size of your business, we have a lot of people listening who are at the beginning of their journey, just starting out, maybe just qualified in the industry, setting up new businesses or thinking about it. Some that have had businesses for ages, businesses all shapes and sizes, like building societies. We have marketing directors listen and things like that. But I feel, personally for me, that a brand guidelines document, and we do one for every client that we have on our agency, is really important for that kind of consistency. And also, one thing we say to them, look, if you want a flyer or something, we don't do that for you. You would need to go and get that done. They can then just use that brand guidelines and get someone to do that quickly and efficiently. So they're the kind of like the key things for me. But how important is the brand guidelines, and what is it, and what should be included, do you think?
For me, the brand guidelines is so important. And that doesn't have to be a massively extensive document. I've seen some guidelines that have been 2 pages. I've seen some that have been like 100 pages and I've had to work with. But the point of them being is that setting key visual aspects of your business down as rules and applying those rules to the marketing material creates consistency. And if we think about branding in terms of what it actually means to a business, it's not really what you say it is. It's your business isn't really the branding, sorry, behind your business isn't what you say, it is what people say about you and what they think about you. And that kind of would come across in marketing material that isn't consistent. If you've got messaging that's being placed top and then eventually it's top left or it's centered or there's no consistency, it just doesn't really add to that familiarity of what people are seeing. And you want people to become accustomed to your brand over time so that it becomes almost second nature, or the visuals become as strong as the logo ident. Because if we think about the logo, the misconception in the industry or what people think is that the logo is the brand, and that's not true. The logo is a visual identifier for your brand, and your brand is everything that comes after that. If you build a strong brand guidelines to begin with and you follow sort of consistent rules, the way that you present yourself will almost become as iconic as your logo would. So it's so important, I think, to set rules that could be quite playful, they could be very corporate, but getting down some boundaries and setting them is very important. Yeah.
So if someone came to you with, oh, I haven't got budget for our venue, I just want to do a quick sort of £5 logo or Fiverr or something like that. Do you think for those people that now you should get the brand guidelines, or do you think you need to maybe get yourself out there a bit more and understand what you want to be first? Or yeah, what are your thoughts on that startup that's never had their own business before?
Startup's an interesting one. I've been reading a book on, I'll have to reference it, but I can't remember the author or the actual title of it. It's about creativity and how startups are different to businesses that are already established in regards to the risks that they can take. Often we think about startups, if you think about starting your own business, how exciting and how energetic and all these crazy ideas you've got. The reason that it's so interesting is that you don't have to, there isn't much risk attached to implementing crazy ideas. You can wing it if you want to. You can make mistakes which don't have as much of an impact. But when you've established and you've been set around for a long time, you become, those risks are, well, risk is riskier, isn't it, to make detrimental changes or implement ideas that may seem a little bit more crazier than others. When you're starting up and you think, I want to go and get a logo, and you maybe go and find a logo and you've spent, say, maybe £5 again on Fiverr. So we'll use that as an analogy and example, that it's not a bad thing that you've started that way. Because like I say, the logo isn't a silver bullet that can tick all the boxes. What you do with that logo from that point onwards is what's important to your brand. But I think if you think about your business when you're starting out, and the reason why I mentioned that initial startup mentality is you start a business with the aspirations for it to be incredible, don't you? I mean, you don't start a business and think, oh, it's just going to be, you think big, don't you? Do you have to. So if you're thinking big and you're aspiring to achieve greatness in all areas of the business, I would be asking the question, why would you opt for going down the route of paying £5 for the logo, which arguably is the first thing that anybody will see for your business? Yeah. Why would you do that? It doesn't make sense. And with that in mind, with the background that is involved in starting most businesses, there's usually some form of history, some story, a narrative to what has inspired you to create or start a business or create a product. And you think, I've got that narrative. I'm going to just go on to Fiverr and show some designer. And I'm not dissing designers on Fiverr because there's some great ones out there. But maybe the issue I have with Fiverr is the process aspect. Because if you sit down with a brand strategist or you sit down with a logo designer and you go through and talk to them about your story and they're asking the right questions and they're seeing the logos that you like and the reasons why, the design decisions, what are the design decisions that have been made in that inspiration and how can you implement them? You've really then creating something that is, I think, the thing that you can all rally behind, because it's like working for a tribe, isn't it? When you work for a company, if you can get behind it and feel part of it and feel like you can rally behind it and you're proud of all that. And if there's meaning to that just small little logo that's maybe so simple to everybody else, but means so much to the business, it just starts things off on the right foot, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's a really good point. It doesn't all necessarily all have to be for the client, does it? It can be for your team and like a badge of honor, something to be proud of.
Yeah. And look, with brand guidelines, when we talk about extensive brand guidelines, they don't always just stop at the external aspects of the brand. They also talk about the internal and how they present themselves to their staff members and their tone of voice. And I don't know if you have these much, but the intranet, and you had this. I remember working with some clients where you've got an internal brand guidelines and an external brand guidelines. And often the visual aesthetic of them is very different because it's a complete different audience. So it's really important, I think, to build some fundamental rules to begin with that are great for brand consistency, that benefit how you look on the outside. But also, I think as a business owner, and I'm thinking about my brand, help with the psychology of your business. I think make you feel like you're doing something that is a positive. It's like getting up and presenting yourself for a meeting, isn't it? It's a certain way you should probably dress for a meeting with the bank manager or something. It's very much a psychological thing as well as a business owner. But more importantly, I think it's important to create consistency for the familiarity aspect so that you're not confusing the audience and just drilling it home that this is you, this is your company or your business, and just keep reaffirming that visual aesthetic of it.
Yeah, no, sounds good. Do you think, because I'm thinking a lot of people, when they think about their brand, they think about their customer, their client. And I guess a startup, if you're new to this, you may not know who your client's going to be, because with like mortgages, for example, you could have your self-employed, you could have your first-time buyer, you may then branch into equity release, which is for over 55. So there's all these different kind of people. Yeah, it actually makes sense thinking about you rather than your client a lot, especially in the beginning, because like I say, you may not know exactly the type of, I think about our business, do I know exactly the type of people we were going to work with when I started? Because you did our branding back in the day.
Yeah, absolutely. And how the business has evolved as well, because it's very much an agile process. It's like you can set rules and ideas of where you want to be. But with anything, if you're, say, you want to move or change, you do that either one, to improve or to survive if, say, business needs to move in a different direction in order for it to do well or do better. And that comes with experience of how those early days of starting up go. When we spoke back then, I'm thinking about when we did the lead engine branding, it had some solid rules in place. We did solidify what the colors were, the fonts that we were going to be using. And as the lead engine, certain directions had changed in the market, maybe the audience, we've been like thinking about when we did the event stuff. The event is almost like something that needs a little bit of a spin or a twist. So we start to engineer that brand guidelines and go, okay, cool. So now we're looking at maybe injecting a new color that represents this, and there's a meaning behind it, which is all good. But I think it all comes down to that idea again of a reason. If you implement a design decision, there has to be a reason for it. And it has to then be a logical reason that you can then apply to other materials or websites. So I'm thinking about that color that we introduced for the conference that we did. That very much became the color that was part of the conference. So we knew that color would be on the different conference materials, etc., and we utilized it in a logical way. So it wasn't just plucked from the air and put in because we liked pink. There's some design decisions that are being made. And I think that's the other thing as well, is it's great to have these rules set, but I do still think you have to, there is a balance. Like, you can be a little bit playful and go with the flow in some areas, but that's when I think professionals can really advise in how you should do that. If you're, say, not trained in that area of, and that's another thing, as a business owner, as a small business owner, you feel like you have to wear all the hats of the business. You're the marketeer, the accountant, you're the, if there's areas that you don't feel confident in or you're not sure about, then that's the best time to consult with professionals, I think. Get them to lead you and guide you.
Absolutely, which opens a whole other like minefield of who to trust and everything like that, because there's so many cowboys out there and so many people, especially in lockdown, how many people have set up their own business being a marketing expert in lockdown.
Absolutely.
Just, yeah, so a whole nother. So I guess it's like have a look at what work they've done before as well. Every designer must have a portfolio. And then if you were looking to hire a designer yourself, would you ask, like, why did you go down this route? And if they keep saying, oh, it's just what the client wanted, then maybe you're then just paying for the design, not for the thinking.
Yeah, I think there are designers out there that will be doing what they're being told to do. Designers out there that maybe would take on the problem because a client doesn't have any idea what the right way is. Maybe the client has an inkling of what they want to achieve from the project. So they would then contact the designer and say, look, I've got a kernel of an idea that I want to talk to you about and I want to push through. And then they might be very open to the suggestions of the designer. I'm very much in the realm of, if I don't think it's going to work, or if I don't think it's a good investment, I will definitely advise. I think it's important if you've been experienced in an industry and somebody's telling you something and you're not sure about it or you're not agreeing, you owe it to your career to advise them. It's the right thing to do. So there are times when it's clear cut and you know that the client has a good idea or it's a very sort of straightforward design and it's a case of just getting it sorted and done. And or it's a case of that you've already established solid brand guidelines and really there isn't any much consultancy involved because you've already set it at the outset 2 years ago and you're just basically looking for some marketing material. So yeah, it has been quite scary seeing the amount of people that have kind of started up going, I'm a marketing specialist, I'm a designer. There's so many things in the industry that I can't stand. And yeah, it's very dodgy in some areas and I've seen it with my own eyes and experienced clients that have had bad experience with other designers and marketeers. And yeah, it's definitely not, it's sad because it costs money, which is not cool.
No, absolutely. So I'm kind of just thinking about what I should be looking at when I'm wanting to create my brand or whether I want to do a rebrand or whatever. Should I be focusing like too much on what competitors are doing, what everyone else is doing? So I'm thinking we take all sort of financial services, really, there's lots of competition. It's like really crowded, whether it's mortgages or protection or exits. There's a lot of people that do the same thing. So should I be looking at them or should I not? Or would you, if you were taking on like a mortgage broker or something, how would you approach that?
If we take it down to, say, somebody comes to me and says, I'm starting up a new mortgage company and I want to create a logo and here's my competitors. We would be asking certain questions. I have a questionnaire that I send out. So that one of the questions in that would be to explore what your competitors look like, because you do want to sit and feel right, because it's what the market's used to seeing. So there is a balance, but I think you have to ask yourself how different you want to be. That kind of comes from the strategy before and what tone of voices you set. What kind of company do you want to be? Do you want to bit out there, or are you appealing to a niche? And in which case, do you then look at what that niche is interacting with, what sites they're looking at, what products they're using, and try and take on those design decisions? And when I say design decisions, that's my way of saying inspiration, because inspiration for me is a word that gets used by companies and they almost copy but call it inspiration. And I think that there's a fine line between what is inspiration and what is copying. But if you're looking at your competitors and taking inspiration, but it's very close, then I would be thinking about design decisions. That's how I word inspiration, as design decisions, and what those design decisions mean and how those decisions, what effect those decisions will have. I definitely would be looking at other markets and other industries that the people would be interacting with. If it's an age group, then I would be looking at what that age group is looking at. And then start getting reference and seeing what works. That's definitely how I would approach it. Definitely.
Cool. And then when it comes to the logo and I suppose a lot of all the identity, if you look at a lot of companies, let's take Apple, for example, like, and maybe Google as well. They started off with quite a lot of detail and a lot going on in the sort of logo and the identity. And then a lot of it becomes way more simplified the longer they've been around, especially like Apple and Google, really clean, almost not much to it.
Absolutely.
Do you think people overthink at the beginning?
Yeah.
And try and do too much?
I'm a huge fan of the simplicity in logo designs, because logos can be quite complicated. There's obviously different types of logos. So you've got an icon and a logo type, and that creates what we call like a logo lockup. So you think about Apple, the Apple icon with an Apple text next to it. That's what forms the logo and the logo type together as one logo. Or you have just generally logo type, which might be just a font based or a bespoke typographical approach. But the simplicity for me is the hardest part, because you can start off quite complicated, but you want to be taking away the bits that are not needed to get it down to its rawest form. Now, those logos have over time, Google and Apple have had more complicated designed logos, and they've had rebrands and they've evolved it. So it's evolved and become simpler and simpler. And a part of that is because of the digital age. These logos are now not just seen on print material or on packaging. They're small in a favicon in a web browser. So they need to be adaptable. And also as well, it's the simplicity of the logo design can make it feel more memorable. Now, I'm a big fan of a designer called Sagi Haviv, and that company has created some incredible logos that you would have been familiar with, like NBC, like National Geographic. There's Chase Bank. I'll have to check that after. but they've created many logos that you're familiar with, that people would be familiar with. And they all follow the same approach set by Sagi Haviv's thinking, which is simple, memorable, distinctive. They tick these boxes. And what makes them so great is that they are those things, that they are very simple. They are memorable. They're not complicated. They do work in different mediums, online, on print. The simplicity angle is very much a style that I've adopted in my work. But then there are some very complicated logos out there as well that do work. It's not, if you think about maybe, move away from the financial services sector, but your Stella Artois kind of beer bottle is almost a logo in itself. And that's very complicated and decorative. So there are a number of ways of approaching things, but it's all about, does it define and answer the brand values and the story that you guys set out from the start? None of these, whether a company chooses to have something more decorative or something simple, it would be led not by somebody turning up going, I like simple logos. It will be led by what's the right thing to do based on the brief and the story at the start of the project. I think it's also important to remind yourself that even though it's your company, that the subjective aspect, the likes and dislikes, can cloud your judgment. And you have to remember that you're not designing for you, you're designing for your customers. And that's really important to remember, that you can let your own sort of subjective likes and dislikes cloud your judgment when it comes to making decisions. That not just design decisions, I guess that's all business decisions.
I was just thinking about like a lot of people work with a design and get really frustrated, and really like there's so many memes from designers about sort of client expectations and client budget and just the what could save you a lot of time and stress of working with a designer, actually putting a little bit of work in at the beginning? Because sometimes you'll get a brief across, like, I need something trustworthy and I like blue. That's just not enough to go on. So I suppose partly it's down the designer to really to dig into that brief as well. But especially if you are starting up, you've got the low budget and you're not working with a designer, that you're working with one that's just going to do what you tell them. Someone's got to do some thinking, haven't they? Otherwise, you're just not going to be happy. And then a lot of the time, if you've never had branding work before, or even if you have, you don't know what you're going to like or not like until you see it. It's one of those things. So how could I, if I'm a financial services person looking for a rebrand or a branding opportunity, just take a lot of that stress out? What could I be doing at the beginning, even with that relationship? Because the last thing you want as well is to keep going back with the men's. You're going to annoy the designer. They're not going to put their heart into it, and you're not going to get the best result anyway. So how can you have a good relationship with the designer is the question.
I think these would all be red flags for me as well. If I was to take on a project and somebody said, all I've got for you is I like blue, and
I don't think anyone's ever said that, but
yeah,
I'm probably exaggerating, but there's trustworthy.
Well, no, I guess the point though is, it's if you go to a designer and think that they're a creative, so they're just going to magically create what I want without me telling them what I would like or what the right thing to do. And I wouldn't say what I like, because let's go back to the point that subjectiveness isn't always the right approach. But I think it's the detail. Is there would be red flags for you as a customer if your designer didn't ask you questions, and so you didn't really carve out a brief. If your designer's not asking you questions in order to establish a more firmer brief, that would be a red flag for me, as if you were employing a designer and you're going to them with not very much information or an idea, and they're just, you don't hear from them for 2 weeks. I'd be like, well, okay, this is a bit odd. Designers to somebody go nuts, just go off and do what you want. That's the worst thing for a designer, because there's so many different avenues that that designer might take, and they may go off on a tangent that is just way out there. And just the, and it's how literal design can be taken quite literally, and it can be quite obvious, but in most cases it's very abstract, and you'd be looking at the design that they present back to you going, this is a car, but it's a blob. It looks like a jelly bean. You're telling me it's a car, but it looks like a jelly bean. I'll be like, and they'll be going off on the abstract aspect, because that's how, what they see. So I think if you are employing a designer, you really have to approach them with clear direction. And with that clear direction, it's the kind of the background, the people that you're trying to, you'd be going to them with a list of, this is my target audience. These are my competitors. These are some of the logos that I like the look of in terms of how they feel, just to, because, yeah, you're going to want to show them the logos that you connect with and why you connect with them. And the designer can ask you that. What is it about this logo that you connect with? What is the design decisions? Coming back to that point, what's the design decisions that are working for you? So you really want to be going to the designer with as much information. And it's not you doing their job. It just makes the process, it's all about the process of getting to the right idea, the right concept. Yeah, I think detail, it's important to have detail. And then from that, the designer can create the brief. Or if you have a brief, go to a designer with a written detailed brief. And maybe we should do something, Alex, where we pull together some questions that people can download. Or
yeah, one thing I was thinking, oh, I wish I asked everyone in the Facebook group, what questions would you want to know of a designer or getting the rebrand done or whatever. But I may do that anyway, and we can get back to them in some sort of form. The last thing I wanted to get across is like the value and how much you should pay. So we've talked about Fiverr and £5 logos and all that sort of jazz. And I've heard people say, oh, I just want to pay 50 quid for a logo before. And I was just like working it out and just kind of like thinking, if you're going to pay, like, how much time would you actually spend, not you, Kaz, as in the listener, like a mortgage broker or a business, like, how much time would you spend for 50 quid? You've got to ask yourself. And also, if a designer's doing that, like, how many are they going to have to do to make a living, to make it worthwhile for them to be self-employed? It's going to be, they're going to have to be doing 2 or 3 every morning. So, like, how much time are they actually going to spend on yours? So it's going to be rushed. It's not going to have that. If you want someone to have time and passion put into it, and you're thinking about how much should I spend on a logo, I think just put yourself in their shoes. Like, how much time are they going to spend on this for the cost and cheaper? One of the favorite memes is that tattoo artist, I think it is, where you get what you pay for, and there's like a unicorn or something. It looks like a kid's drawn it as a tattoo, and someone's always done it cheaper. So I think my advice would be, yeah, think about how much time would you spend for the money you're spending, and it's probably going to be what you're going to get out of it. What are your thoughts on it? Because it's really hard, isn't it?
It's so hard.
There's not an average industry logo or brand guidelines price, is there?
No, prices could range from 5 quid if you search from Fiverr to thousands. There's obviously value-based pricing. The hardest part of it all is the equation of time and creativity, because the two don't always go hand in hand. If I spent 4 hours on coming up with a logo versus 10 minutes of a eureka moment, and yet the eureka moment may be way better than the large amount of time that I've spent trying to come up with an idea. The idea of something taking longer and leading to a better outcome is not always the case, because as we all do, some of the best ideas that we come up with do happen little to no effort in a short space of time. So it's very tricky. It's hard when you're pricing by kind of the time. For me, a logo design would probably take around 2 days, of which I would charge accordingly under the current way that I'm charging for logos. But I don't think you should hold a designer to the hourlies, if that makes sense. If they come back to you with an awesome idea and it's been a day and a half rather than 2 days, the designer should still be charging for the 2 days work, let's be honest, because that's what they've quoted to create the design. And it's the ideas part that have, it's how they've process the information to create the ideas that you're paying for rather than the time it takes to produce them, which any art worker could do more so than a designer. So yeah, it's really tricky, but there is definitely a gray area between the idea of how long something takes versus how much it's worth.
Definitely. So difficult. Dude, thank you for helping us, because talking about something that's visual where people can't see anything is a really difficult subject to talk about.
Absolutely.
Like in general, but I think we've given some people definitely some food for. You've got your own podcast. I can't remember. Have you guys launched that yet? Or is that?
Yeah. It's been launched this. I don't know when this show is going to be out, but I'm thinking that by the time it has been released, it will be launched. Yeah. My friend Liam Jackson and myself are doing a podcast on the design industry and things that we've learned throughout the years. And very much just a conversation. It's getting better as we do it more often. We've upgraded the mics from using the dodgy internal mics on our computers, but we're very much close to just having a conversation. And so it's the See Through Design podcast. And we're hoping to just have regular chats. And if your listeners want to kind of talk or reach out to us or ask some questions that are more related to design and marketing and stuff, then I'm happy to answer those. But if you want to listen, go for it.
So See Through Design, so it'll be on like iTunes and Spotify and all that.
It'll be on all the majors. And the logo is a simple, memorable, distinctive.
It should be.
Logo after all.
Right, brilliant. And I know Liam randomly outside of you. It's a very small world.
Very, very small
world. I've had some good chats and drinks with him in London town pre-pandemic. You've both had logos featured in this sort of logo design annual book thing, which I can't remember the name of.
We're both award-winning logo designers. How about that? I say that and we'll leave the room with a normal-sized head.
I just heard your mic drop.
just boom. But he's actually got two awards and I've got one, so you don't talk about that.
Not bothered.
Logo Lounge is it's a great honour to be featured. Actually, two logos in there. It's great getting one, but to get two in this year's is pretty incredible. So that's available at Amazon and internationally as well, all over the place. My passion is logo design, and I'm hoping listeners to this podcast might come and follow me on Instagram.
I was going to say, watch your Instagram, because the food launching one, which is like a fork that's a rocket. That was, if anyone wants to know if Kaz walks the walk as well as talks the talk, follow. What's your Instagram?
It's kusumano.uk, which is just, should I spell it out? It's a bit.
I'm going to say you're going to need to. Yeah.
That's CUSUMANO.UK. If you find that on Instagram, and you'll see my portfolio and the bits I get up to. And if you need a logo, feel free to reach out.
Absolutely, dude. Thank you so much. Really great catching up with you.
Pleasure, buddy. Yeah.
It's been way too long. We're definitely going to have to post inoculation catch up properly.
Absolutely. And definitely. If you've got any other topics you want me to invite back, you want to invite me back for, mate, I'm more than happy to.
I will. Likewise, if you would like someone on yours, reach out. All right, buddy.
Well, take it easy. Bye.
Bye. Bye.